to the Friday Five here on the Agent Survival Guide podcast. We are back with another weekly recap. I am your host, Sarah Ruppel, and it is Friday, April 26th. And can someone please tell me where this year has gone? We are wrapping up the month of April, and it's been a little bit of a whirlwind lately. The end of school year activities have officially begun. So far, we've done a field trip and a concert, with more concerts, field trips, plays, and parties on the horizon. Not to mention, we just attended middle school orientation for parents. So please, send me all the good vibes over the course of the next 3 years, please. Taylor Swift released her album, The Tortured Poets Department, which actually turned out to be a double album drop. My daughter wasn't the biggest fan of the album, but she has picked out a few songs that she'll play here and there. I have not listened all the way through the second set of songs, mainly because I got sidetracked by watching Rebel Moon 2 when it came out, and then got further sidetracked reading and then listening to Snow Globe by Soyoung Park. And before I get sidetracked again, let's talk about last Friday's question of the week. We asked you to vote on which Taylor Swift album was your favorite, giving you all 11 of her albums to choose from, including the newest Tortured Poets Department. The winning album is not just one album at all, but a five-way tie, and I think that speaks volumes about the range of Swift's fan base. The winning albums, in chronological order, were Fearless, Speak Now, 1989, Reputation, and Folklore. Now, I did not rule out a tie for this week's question, but I also did not anticipate a five-way tie, so we might have to hold a rematch vote in a future episode. We will get to this week's question a little bit later on in the episode. So for now, let's get into our list. Number five, a couple of events that I want to highlight, three of which are happening next week. We are back on the road with more Ritter road shows. On Wednesday, May 1st, we'll be in Schaumburg, Illinois. And then on Thursday, May 2nd, we've got one team in Boca Raton, Florida, and another headed to Wauwatosa, Wisconsin. These roadshow events are a great opportunity to meet the Ritter Insurance marketing team and learn about products, tools, and services you get as one of our agents. We will be serving refreshments at each of those Ritter roadshows, so no need to worry about that. And we also want to give you something back for giving us a little bit of your time that you could definitely be doing something else. So you'll get a free CE voucher for attending those Ritter roadshows. More details about locations and how to register will be linked in our episode notes, so be sure to check those out after you are done listening. You'll also find that information on our events page at ritterim.com. The next event I want to make sure I mention. Here at Ritter, we are known for our senior health insurance product expertise, but we do offer quite a bit more than Medicare, which is why on May 8th, we are holding our annual More Than Medicare Summit, an event highlighting ancillary products. Led by Brenda Salyer, our MTM team has a full day planned, featuring product overviews, selling insights, networking, panel discussions from leading carriers, a full expo room, giveaways, and so much more. The MTM Summit is an in-person event at the Crown Plaza in King of Prussia, and the date for that again is Wednesday, May 8th. Highly recommend registering that sooner rather than later if you're interested in attending, and we will have the link to register in the episode notes as well. When you get to that site, you can also check out the full agenda for a list of panel discussions and presentations. Number four, Ruppel recommends. While we're on the subject of events, this week we finally got the official invite from Apple to the Let Loose event on Tuesday, May 7th, beginning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And thanks to the variety of logos used in the announcement, we can say for sure that this event will be the one where Apple announces the next generation of iPads and a new Apple Pencil. The main logo for the event features the Apple logo in rainbow colors, folded up like it's made out of paper. A hand holding an Apple Pencil extends out of the folds of the Apple, creating a splashed paint effect in tones of pink and orange. And then the leaf above the Apple is represented by a three-dimensional gradient blob sort of shape, shifting from blue at the base to pink at the top. Under the Apple, the words "Let Loose" are written in a cursive font with visual brushstrokes. It is one of six different logos, all showcasing different styles of drawing capabilities on the iPad. Rumors so far suggest a new Apple Pencil with a squeeze gesture and magnetically swappable tips. Thinner iPad Pro models with OLED displays in two sizes, iPad Air models in two sizes, which we've mentioned before, and an update to the Magic Keyboard accessory for the iPad Pro. I have already penciled in the date on my calendar, and we will be reporting back on official details in 2 weeks. Number three, we've moved two steps closer to a TikTok ban in the United States, but that's not to say that banning the popular social app has gotten any less challenging than it was the last time we talked about it. First, on Tuesday this week, the Senate passed a national security package that also contained the provision on banning TikTok. For a refresher, when it passed the House of Representatives, that version called for a divestment of TikTok from ByteDance to a U.S.-owned company within 180 days from enactment. Should divestment not occur within that time frame, it would become illegal for the app to be offered by U.S. app stores for download. The Senate has extended the time frame for divestment from the original 180-day window to a 9-month window, plus a 90-day presidential extension, in an attempt to give ByteDance more time to find a buyer. On Wednesday this week, President Biden signed that bill into law, meaning that should ByteDance fail to find a U.S.-owned buyer to divest to, we would see a TikTok ban at the earliest in January 2025 and at the latest in April 2025. And of course, that is without any further activity in the form of lawsuits, which are expected. There's also very much so a likelihood that the courts will strike down the ruling, so it'll be interesting to see how this situation pans out. I can't say that I currently have any misgivings about kicking off our social media series with the app, but we will certainly be keeping an eye on where this story goes next. Number two, on Tuesday this week, the Federal Trade Commission voted 3-2 in favor of banning most non-compete agreements in U.S. workplaces. According to the FTC press release, the final rule will, quote, promote competition by banning non-competes nationwide, protecting the fundamental freedom of workers to change jobs, increasing innovation, and fostering new business formation, end quote. The legislation was first proposed back in January 2023, with the original comment period extended from March to April of 2023. During that time frame, the FTC received 26,000 public comments on the subject, 25,000 of which were in favor of banning non-compete clauses. FTC Chair Lena M. Khan explained the impetus behind the final rule as, quote, non-compete clauses keep wages low, suppress new ideas, and rob the American economy of dynamism, including from the more than 8,500 new startups that would be created a year once non-competes are banned. The FTC's final rule to ban non-competes will ensure Americans have the freedom to pursue a new job, start a new business, or bring a new idea to market, end quote. In their research, the FTC found that 1 in 5 Americans are subject to a non-compete clause, which translates to 18% of U.S. workers, or 30 million people. According to FTC estimates, the ban will not only bring 2.7% more startups to market, it will lead to an increase in innovation, reduced healthcare costs, and higher earnings. They project 17,000 to 29,000 additional patents filed per year post-ban. Healthcare costs are estimated to be reduced between $74 and $194 billion over the next decade. The FTC also forecasts workers' wages would increase by $400 to $488 billion across the next 10 years. That comes in at an increase of a little over $500 per worker per year. The ban will work like this. Once the final rule is published in the Federal Register, it will become law after 120 days. On the effective date, workers with existing non-competes, as long as you're not considered a senior executive, those non-competes will no longer be enforceable. The FTC will require employers to send out a notification of that fact. For senior executives, existing non-competes can stay in place, but that rule only applies to fewer than 1% of workers. Senior executive is defined in the final rule as an individual who makes over $151,164 a year and is in a, quote, policy-making position, end quote. New non-compete clauses are banned from the effective date of the rule, whether the individual is a senior executive or not. In one of many releases on this rule, the FTC acknowledged the necessity of protecting trade secrets, something that senior executives are typically privy to. They outline two alternatives to non-compete clauses for those trade secrets: non-disclosure agreements and trade secret laws. Not long after the final rule was announced, and as predicted by many experts in the lead-up to the results of the FTC vote, lawsuits are expected to challenge this rule. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce has already announced plans to do so in hopes of blocking the new legislation. Shout out to Tina for sending this story over this week. We will be keeping an eye on how this unfolds in the coming months. And number one on our list this week, April 1st marked the one-year anniversary of Medicaid unwinding. We've been reporting on this redetermination period for quite some time, going back to before the official date for unwinding was announced. But for those of you who are newer to the industry, quick background. During the pandemic, the Family First Coronavirus Response Act created a continuous enrollment requirement so Medicaid beneficiaries would keep their coverage through the last month of the COVID-19 public health emergency in exchange for funding at the federal level. Now, during that time frame, Medicaid enrollment grew to 92.3 million beneficiaries. And as the pandemic wore on, renewing the PHE came in smaller timeframes that happened more frequently until we were getting about a day or two notice that the PHE was extended for another 60 days. At one point, the Biden administration promised they would give beneficiaries at least 60 days notice before Medicaid unwinding would begin. Then they realized how many people were going to be affected by the great unwinding and uncoupled the enrollment requirement from the public health emergency with the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2023. That set the date for the great unwinding of Medicaid to begin on April 1st, 2023, which gave everyone involved just over 100 days to figure out what that process was going to look like. States also had a little bit of flexibility with their start date, so many of them pushed back the start of those redeterminations by up to 3 months. A special enrollment period was created specifically for beneficiaries losing coverage as a result of unwinding, allowing them to enroll in a marketplace plan to avoid disruption in coverage. Most recently, as we covered back in our episode 3 weeks ago, on March 28th, CMS announced that because redeterminations were taking longer than anticipated, that marketplace SEP would be extended until November 30th, 2024. And here we are, a little over 1 year out from the beginning of the Medicaid unwinding process. Couple of things I'd like to highlight here today. First, KFF updated their unwinding tracker, so we have some fresh stats on how everything is going. As of April 19th, 20.3 million beneficiaries have been disenrolled from Medicaid and CHIP rolls, accounting for 22% of total enrollment. 44.4 million individuals have had their coverage renewed, making up 47% of total enrollment. That leaves 29.4 million beneficiaries with renewals remaining, accounting for 31% of the total enrollment. Since we last looked at these numbers, about 5 million beneficiaries were processed in the time of a little over 3 weeks. So there is progress being made, but there's still a ways to go. Even at the same rate, it'll take another 2.5 months to work through those remaining enrollments. Here in Pennsylvania, processed enrollments went up as well, with 848.4 thousand beneficiaries disenrolled from either CHIP or Medicaid. And then on the renewal side, PA has processed 2 million renewals. KFF has also been highlighting procedural disenrollments. That's when a disenrollment occurs because an individual did not complete their renewal, their contact information was not properly updated, or perhaps they did not understand the renewal process. It doesn't necessarily mean that they don't still qualify for coverage. So, very important that if you have Medicaid clients, that they're going through the appropriate determination steps here. For a lot of beneficiaries, they haven't had to complete something like this before. So again, reach out to those beneficiaries, make sure they know what they need to do so they don't end up facing a disruption in coverage. Should you have someone reach out and they've been deemed a procedural disenrollment, keep in mind, states must give procedural disenrollments a 90-day window to submit a renewal form so Medicaid can reconsider their eligibility. Otherwise, they'll have to start all over again from square one with a brand new application for Medicaid coverage. If you can help clients avoid that from happening, that is the best case scenario. And if you have someone reach out who is still within the window of reconsideration, definitely want to be prepared so you can help them with that renewal. And also on the other side, be prepared to help with marketplace coverage if that turns out to be the solution. That is one of the benefits of having a diverse portfolio and the knowledge to really help individuals when they are in these situations. Now, as I've been reading through some of the reports on Medicaid unwinding and thinking about the confusion around the whole redetermination process, it got me thinking about the general confusion around products in our industry and the steep learning curve that we all face, learning about all the different products in the Medicare-related space. There's the basic parts of Medicare, but then there are other products that complement Medicare products, supplements that fill in the gaps, and of course, other ancillary products. So for this week's question, we're going to have a list of these different pieces of coverage, and I want to know which one was the most challenging to learn about. You can cast your vote at bit.ly/ASG question. It is a completely anonymous poll. All you have to do is click on your answer and hit the submit button. We're just interested in collecting answers. We're not trying to collect any other information from you. That link again is bit.ly/ASG question. And you can also find the link in our notes and on our socials. So please, we would really appreciate you answering and letting us know. It really helps us to improve the content we put out here on the show. And thank you so much for all of you who have been participating and following along with the show. We really, really appreciate your support. If you're wondering how to follow along with us, just hit the follow button, that little button with the plus sign on the app you're listening in, and then the new episodes of our podcast will be added to your listening queue so you don't miss out on any of our upcoming episodes or the answer to the question of the week in next week's Friday 5 episode. That is all we've got for today. I hope you have a great weekend. Stay healthy and stay safe out there. And we will see you next week. The Agent Survival Guide podcast is a production of Ritter Insurance Marketing, an integrity company. This episode was written and produced by me, Sarah Ruppel. Script editing and fact check by Isabel Vitale. Podcast design by Urban Rivera. Artwork by Vivian Zhao. Follow along with us wherever you like to listen.